Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
I need you to do the drum beat. Ready? It goes like this. Doom, doom, ch, doom, 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 ch, doom, doom, ch, doom, 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 ch, doom, doom, ch, doom, 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 ch. You know what? I'm just the drummer.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Hold on. I've been waiting for this moment for all my life. Hold on. Hold on. I can feel it coming in the air tonight.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the video of the giant gorilla sitting behind the drum set?
Yes.
That's one of my favorite commercials of all time. It's incredible. Because that song is great too.
Oh, it's a classic. It's an amazing song. Thanks. And also Miami Vice. So.
Oh yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. It's like part of my childhood. Yeah. Sorry, that's your line.
It's time to say, how's it going? Oh, no. Hey, everybody. How are you doing? You are listening to The Command Zone. My name is Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And this is our post-PAX episode that is just filled with stuff that we did at PAX.
Yep, we're back.
We're back.
Not that the show was ever gone, but Jimmy and I were both gone traveling.
Yeah, you had three... So Josh released a vlog of his experiences at PAX, and the first scene is him hauling every single piece of luggage down the hall that you've had for the past 3 weeks, I guess, now.
Yeah, so we went to London, Copenhagen, and then Iceland, and we flew directly, by we, I mean me and my girlfriend, Ethel, and we flew directly from Iceland to Seattle for PAX, and then we did all the PAX stuff. Yeah, and we had a lot of bags because we bought stuff. And then also We were in cold climate places, Iceland, so we had like big jackets and coats that we had to lug around.
When Ethel had a giant jacket on when I saw her on, I think, Saturday, I was like, that's perfect. It's kind of cold and rainy in Seattle right now. Like, I did not pack for this. I had to buy a hoodie.
It worked out. You went to Toronto.
Yep.
For, what was it for? For the
North American League of Legends Championship Finals. Very exciting.
Super exciting. Yeah. And then you went directly to PAX. Had to carry my EDH decks because I didn't want to have to get them through customs in four different countries.
It's interesting. So I went through a few airport securities. For those of you that have traveled with Magic decks, they always check it because it just is a giant, thick, you can't see through it on the x-ray, just blob of stuff. They only ever checked all the deck boxes once.
Really?
Usually they just kind of, they like looked at it. One time they just swabbed it. One time they opened one up. And they're like, what is this? I'm like, It's a card game. They're like, oh, cool. And I always just go, like Pokemon. And they're like, okay, we get it. Pokemon. I've heard that name recently. But you got your decks back. Now I can finally hand them back to you as well.
We should mention our sponsor, Card Kingdom. You've heard us talk about it for many episodes now. We continually get tons and tons of feedback from all our people on Twitter and the comments on YouTube and on Rocket Jump about how they love using Card Kingdom, how good they are, how fast they ship. You need to use the affiliate link, cardkingdom.com/commandzone, so that they know that we're the ones that sent you. That's the best way to support the show. You really need to be pre-ordering all your Kaladesh stuff right now.
That's right, because you're done pre-ordering your Conspiracy 2 stuff.
You already got your Conspiracy 2 stuff, and now it's Kaladesh time, so... Order all that stuff through Card Kingdom and use that affiliate link, and you'll really be supporting us. I mean, you're gonna order that stuff anyway. Might as well get it from the best place that's gonna get it to you the fastest and support your favorite podcast.
Thumbs up. So PAX happened this last weekend. That was exciting. We both had a blast. Josh, you got to go to PAX for the very first time.
Yeah, it was my first PAX. It was really cool. I was a community ambassador, which meant that I was involved with like the professor from Tulare Community College, Maria from Magic the Amateuring, a bunch of other like people that are involved in Magic, some streamers, some people from different countries, YouTubers, podcasters, bloggers, all kinds. So that was really fun. We got to do a tour of the Wizards of the Coast
from
offices.
From Mark Rosewater himself.
Mark Rosewater gave the tour. That was amazing. Cool. But And I did a vlog of that entire experience. I also got to sort of ride your coattails, and my vlog also includes what you were doing, Jimmy, which was even bigger and even cooler. We're calling you Mr. Magic now.
Oh, boy.
Jimmy was the MC of the...
Jimmy the Red. I like that. Mr. Magic makes it. I'm corporate now, guys. I've sold out. It's all over.
I wonder what your Viking name would be now, because, you know... Like, it's like so-and-so Dragon Eye or whatever.
Oh,
it's like
right.
The Viking. You're like Jimmy...
Red Belt.
Red Magic.
Red Magic.
I don't know. I don't know what your Viking name would be, but it would be better than what we just said. Yeah, Jimmy was the MC of the opening and closing ceremonies for all of the Kaladesh magic stuff, I guess.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was just basically on Friday and Monday, the first and last days of PAX, Magic started off with the show and ended with the show, and we previewed a bunch of cards, and we introduced the first mechanics. Everyone learned about vehicles and fabricate. And
energy counters.
Energy counters, yeah. Oh boy, we're going to spend a lot of time in the future talking about energy counters, that's for sure. So that was a lot of fun, and we both got to hang out all weekend. It was awesome. We played a lot of Magic. We went to Card Kingdom itself. Make sure you just watch Josh's vlog, though. It is a perfect encapsulation of everything. Like, when I watch it, I'm not going to lie, when I watch a vlog, I just don't. I start it, I kind of skip through, and I'm just like, yeah, well, okay, cool, yeah, your life's so interesting, yay. But when I watched yours, Josh, I sat beginning to finish and didn't stop. I just sat there and watched it. I was like, this is a lot of fun. So you did a great job. I'm excited. You guys should all watch it.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out. The links will be in the show notes. The prof is in there a lot. Like mm-hmm. I said, Maria's in there. Jimmy's in there a
prof
lot.
Prof is hilarious in it.
Yeah. A bunch of, you know, we were hanging out with a lot of different people from the Magic community. So even like Andrew Brown's in there for a quick little bit.
Yeah, and
like
he threw Melissa it out to you. That's great. He did not forget that you beat him at a PTQ once.
It was nice of him to bring that up so I didn't have to. I was really happy about that.
He's not going to forget that. I'm sure he remembers everyone that he's played to a certain degree.
Yeah, those guys usually do. But for sure. I wasn't sure Andrew even knew my name, but evidently he does. So that's cool.
So this episode.
Yeah,
speaking
of PAX...
We got to hang out with we got to have like interview time scheduled with certain employees. So we got to sit down and talk to Mark Rosewater, who's the lead designer
for
R&D.
All of Magic.
Yeah. and talk about Kaladesh and a little bit of four-color commander stuff. And we also got to talk to our good friend Gavin Verhey about Kaladesh and the new Arch Enemy product, which is like the first one in 6 years or something, he said?
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's actually still a ways off. It's coming out next year, but he was the... I believe he was the lead designer for Arch Enemy. So,
yeah.
Super exciting. We're going to do both of those interviews. But first, I can feel it coming in the air. We've got our Kaladesh preview card.
Oh, yeah. We should have mentioned this at the top of the show to keep people...
Burying the lead. Jimmy,
that is exactly
Jimmy, it's got to be becoming passé for you. You've previewed so many cards. I feel like now... Like the command, it's great the command zone gets preview card. I'm not complaining, but this is just like, it's usually like your, I don't know, 15th or 16th card that you're revealing to the world by the time it gets to our show. Yeah. Like you, seriously.
That's
true.
For Eldritch Moon, I previewed 3 cards, yeah. I think. Maybe 4. And then
if you count the other side of the meld cards too, that might be like,
yeah, that's
yeah,
a lot of extra.
Yeah,
text.
Exactly.
Oh boy.
If those are separate cards, then it's really like 7 or 8.
Yeah. I'm just happy I got to preview Emrakul. That was the coolest by far.
What about New Chandra?
I mean, New Chandra was great too, but really credit goes to Christine Sprinkle for being Chandra on stage. And
I'm just biased. I just put all of those under the Jimmy Wong reveal category, but you're right. Other people did some, I guess, some stuff. Christine like came out like dressed as Chandra with fire all on.
Yeah, so, like,
but whatever, that's
deal.
A Jimmy Wong reveal. We all know that.
Well, we do have an exclusive Kaladesh preview card for the Command Zone, which is really exciting. So do we want to drum roll it?
Terry, drum roll, please. I'll let you read it since you're the expert on this card.
Sure. This card is Padim, Consul of Innovation. For 3 and a blue, you get a 1/4 legendary creature Vedalken Artificer at rare. And he says, artifacts you control have hexproof, and at the beginning of your upkeep, if you control the artifact with the highest converted mana cost or tied for the highest converted mana cost, draw a card. And the flavor text, impress me.
I love the flavor text, actually. Impress me.
Yeah, so Padim is like the judge.
Yes, he's like the judge of the science fair.
Yeah, and boy, does he have a big head.
Well, he's smart.
Yeah, he's
very
smart.
He also has like a little flying Is that a fabricate? What are we calling those flying things?
It looks like a servo-esque token. I'm not sure exactly what. It's like a butterfly made of metal.
You know what it looks like? It looks like that metal owl from Clash of the Titans, the original, not the new one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really...
Yeah, just saying.
That movie, by the way, one of the greatest of all time as well.
Yeah, I love the flavor, right? He's the judge, and if you have the artifact with the highest converted mana cost, he rewards you by drawing you a card.
Yeah, and the artifacts you control have hexproof, so... Already, I think this is very powerful. Craig has a Memnarch deck that I think this would 100% be happy to go into.
You have a Muzio deck.
Yeah, the Muzio deck. That would actually, this entire set is just like dripping with cards that that deck wants to use.
Those two decks are going to become so much more powerful. This card definitely slots into those decks. And there's some blue-red artifact-themed decks that exist. Maybe some blue-white ones, too. My question is this a... Do you see that this card is powerful enough to be its own deck? So that, is it powerful enough that it would be the lead singer, you know, Padim would be, and maybe Muzio and Memnarch would be in the deck? Or is it just not, is it just an in the 99 type power level?
He feels way more utility, just because it's, I mean, if you're in mono blue, you're going to find more ways to draw cards than once each upkeep, and you have to have an artifact. Because you're already, in any monocolor deck, already going to have a ton of artifacts to help you ramp out, because you don't have the other colors to help you out there.
Your artifacts getting hexproof is good, but I don't know that it's...
Doesn't give himself hexproof, notably. Yeah. The interesting thing about this card, I think, is I don't know how many decks even really want him necessarily, unless you have a... I think it's very meta-dependent, so in we've had people destroying artifacts all the time, but... Usually it happens because of something like Shatterstorm, which blows them all up at the same time.
Yeah, Vandal Blast.
Vandal Blast, sorry, not Shatterstorm.
Shatterstorm also does it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like people want to get the most out of blowing up stuff. Padim is interesting.
Or
I think,
like Hercule's Recall or Cyclonic Rift or Planar Outburst, cards that just destroy everything. Yeah, you're right. There's not a ton of, you know, you get Utter Ends sometimes and Anguish Unmakings that'll do it, but I'd say... You know, 7 times out of 10, what's destroying your artifact, it doesn't care if it's hexproof or not.
Yeah, I think your deck needs to really, like, if Blightsteel Colossus is your win condition, then Padim gets that much better.
Yeah, hexproof and indestructible is pretty good.
I mean, like, I think it gets there. And I know I mean, like, my Muzio deck, that is one of the win conditions, so, like, 100% this card's going in there. So, I don't know, he seems very utility. I'm sure that in the instances, right, he's one of those cards where when you play it, the impact... If your deck is going to really use the hexproof bit, people will go, oh, no. Because all of a sudden, now they can't do the thing that they wanted to do. Right. Padim is there. And he's drawing you cards on top of that. So I think the drawing cards is, if it happens, awesome. If it doesn't, no big deal. Because you really care about the hexproof thing more than anything else.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Seems cool. Card. All right.
I enjoy it.
Well, that is our preview card for Kaladesh. Now, we're going to talk to... Mark Rosewater. Actually, we already talked to him. And
we talked to him, and you get to hear us talk to him again.
Right. Listen, if you don't know who Mark Rosewater is, we'll explain it, but you should probably know. He's the head designer for all of Magic. Mm-hmm. He's the lead designer on a lot of sets. I don't know all of them. I'd say Mark is probably like the second most important person to the game of Magic ever after Richard Garfield. I think that's pretty safe to say.
Yeah, I think the entity of R&D itself is the second most important thing after Richard Garfield. And Mark he is the face of R&D.
He's been the custodian of Magic for like a very long time. Mm-hmm. Now, other people have designed some of the sets in there. And you know, it's not just him. But as far as like, you know, handprints on the game, I'd say Mark is... only behind the guy that invented the game.
Between Mark and like Aaron Forsyth, who's also a major part of R&D, like they are essentially the ones there. Yeah, the custodians, the guardians of what Magic is. So it was really awesome to be able to sit down and talk to him about Kaladesh, which he considers, as you'll find out, one of his top sets he's ever designed.
Mark Rosewater.
Hello.
How's it going, Mark?
Going good.
Yeah. So we've gotten to hang out a lot this weekend, which is always a blast. And this is gonna be coming out after PAX, of course. Mm-hmm. So what a great weekend it was.
It was an awesome weekend. The weekend knows.
Success.
Yeah, every day was great.
I feel that's very safe to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So far, it's been going amazing. So unless like a comet hits the earth or something, I think we're in good shape.
Unless Chandra comes back and just burns us to dust.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I'm excited. I mean, clearly you're very excited to talk about Kaladesh. It's been in the 16 months, you said, you've been working
since on? I handed it off.
Wow.
I've been working on it for 3 years or whatever. I mean, I started a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a long process. I don't think people even really understand how long our process is.
Yeah, this is something we try to explain occasionally on the show. But yeah, what is the timeline?
Well, I mean, for example, so right now, today, like this month, I'm going to hand over Spaghetti Block, which is the 2018 fall set, and start work on Milk Block, which is the 2019 spring block.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's 2 years from now, but that doesn't even count the time you're working on it before you hand it off, right?
Right, and when I talk about I'm working on something, that's actively working on it. I have meetings right now where we're talking about sets as far as 2022.
Wow.
So
you're churning on that stuff for, that's 6 years, man.
Yeah, long, long time.
Wow, yeah.
And here's the other thing, like in the last, I figured this out, in the last month, I've had meetings about 10 different blocks.
How do you keep that all straight? Do you have like a spreadsheet somewhere, or like are you like a super?
It's why I can't remember anything, because I have all these things I have to remember. Like my podcast, I always like forget like words, or like I'm trying to remember a card. And what people don't realize is I have so much information I'm trying to keep. Holy moly! And the thing is, most people who work in R&D don't work on every set. So mm-hmm. like a lot of people, like, oh, they work on this set and then that's, you know, and so they're very familiar about certain sets, and then there's a kind of like, yeah, they play test or something, but they don't really know the sets. But I'm in charge of the whole thing, so, like, I have to know every block.
Right.
Like, I have to make sure it all clicks together. So, like, I can't not pay attention. And, just to make things even more fun, I'm the spokesperson, so I got to keep up to date on everything that's now, because I got to talk with the public about, you know, all these things that are currently going on. So
wait, when do you talk to the public about stuff like that? When does that happen?
Well, I mean, fortunately, Kaladesh is a set that you're very excited about, and for good reason. Do you rank it very highly in sort of your favorite sets to have worked on?
Yes. It is in contention for the best set I've ever done. I've not yet given the number one slot, and Innistrad's currently the number one slot, but it is in contention. At least I need to see how it plays out, and you see what the public thinks of it, but I mean, like, it's in contention. It is an awesome, awesome set. It's really good.
What are the factors that go into you putting it on in the pantheon of the great sets that you've worked on?
For example, Kaladesh is my 20th lead, for example. So mm-hmm. I've made 20 mm-hmm. sets, some with other people. Like, I co-led this with Sean Main. So, mm-hmm. like, not all of them were solo endeavors. But it has to do with a couple things. One is I'm very holistic. So, like, the end result. Like, how does it feel? Like, the cool thing about Kaladesh is it's not the pieces. The metaphor I've been using is cooking. But like, I feel like I made an amazing recipe. And are there eggs in it? Yeah. I've used eggs before. Is there some flour? Yeah, there's some flour in it. You know, are there one or two new ingredients? Yeah, there's a couple new ingredients. But, like, it's not the ingredients. People get so focused on, like, the artifact theme or, like, components of it. I'm like, no. Those are just ingredients in the dish. What I'm proud of is when someone takes the dish, they go, ooh, that's really good. That's what I'm looking for. It's, like, the net result of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't think when people look at, like, a dish, they go, well, let me isolate the components of it.
Well, and very rarely do you eat a food where it has anything you haven't tasted before. But very often you're like, ginger? I never would have put ginger in there. And that's really what makes this is something I've never tasted before.
Right, and Kaladesh to me is that thing where it's not that it's not magic. I mean, it's clearly magic, and it like, obviously when you play it, like, look, this is magic, but it has a feel to it. It's just like, oh, all right, I wouldn't have put some ginger in that. Wow, like, it really has that sense to it that's very unique. Innistrad did that, you know. The sets to me that are my pinnacle sets are like, I did something we hadn't done before that as a cohesive whole, it's just like, wow, this is an amazing thing as a holistic thing. And part of it is not just even me. I mean, it's not just like my design, my team's design. It has to do with how it's developed, how the creative, like all the pieces come together. Like, my best stuff is not just my best stuff. It is, hey, everybody was on their A game. And mm-hmm. that, look, I think magic does amazing things. But every once in a while, like, we just knock it out of the park. Just like, you know, it's just amazing. To me, Kaladesh is one of those sets. It's just, on every vector, it's just like amazing.
Oh, man. You should talk about magic more, because I so want to play it so bad now.
That's part of my goal.
Yeah, it's working. Do you want to talk about Chandra?
Yeah, so we saw the premiere of another 4-ability Planeswalker on Monday at the closing ceremonies. And
we saw Jimmy was like involved in the unveiling of it.
Well, yeah.
Oh yeah, we just saw it.
Truly, the lighting crew was involved in the big spectacle. This Chandra, I think, is immediately my favorite Chandra of all time, and it's right up there with the Chandra that just got released in Oath of the Gatewatch too, yeah. Which is another amazing Chandra. But again, this is something we always talk about. Red has had this trouble. They don't really ramp. They right. don't really give you card advantage, and this Chandra has both right on there.
So one of the things we've had is Chandra's always been a really popular character. Mm-hmm. People have really taken to Chandra. They love her. And holy moly, we had trouble making her a good card. Like, we kept trying to make her a good planeswalker. And like, okay, guys, no, this time, this one. Oh, no. Okay, this one, you know, and we really had issues with it. And I feel like in just the last couple of iterations, we slowly kind of figured out how to do a good red planeswalker. And look, we're in Kaladesh, Chandra's hometown. We're like, we got to do it right here. You can't do a bad Chandra. Like, this is where right. she shines. And so we pulled all the stops. You know, we've only made two previous four, mm-hmm. you know, four loyalty ability planeswalkers. So this time we're going to do it right. And we made a fun card. So
yeah, yeah. I think Commander players are going to be very excited to play this in their deck, just for obvious reasons. Well, her first plus one says each opponent, so every time that happens, everyone does a low, woo, yay! And her second ability, just being able to ramp two red, is fantastic.
Yeah, it's just something that red doesn't really get and needs, especially if you're mono red.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
super excited. Can we talk a little bit about Kaladesh and Commander specifically?
Okay.
We had Gavin in here earlier, and mm-hmm. you know, one of the things we love hearing, and we've heard actually a lot more mm-hmm. sort of recently from the Wizards folks, is how you guys consider Commander and think about it when designing the set. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Sure. So one of the tricks of designing Magic is it's not really one game. It's a lot of different games, and that, you know, it's kind of a shared rule set, but like someone who's drafting, it's a different animal than someone playing Commander versus
right.
Modern versus Standard versus Pauper versus Tiny Leader. Like, it
yeah.
goes on and on and on. In fact, people write to me about formats I've never even heard of.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I play, you know,
I heard
goat Magic. You guys really haven't done much for Goat Magic lately. And so, I mean, the thing is, one of the things we look at is just where there is a lot of people playing. And the more people playing something, the more attention we give to it.
Right.
I mean, we can't look at everything.
Right.
And so, obviously, the biggest of our attention goes to limited formats, the draft, and standard. Those, just because more people play that than anything else. But
mm-hmm.
Commander's getting up there. There's a lot of Commander players. Obviously, we've made an annual Commander product. And we now, when we make sets, we very much think about it. One of the things I stress is not every legendary creature necessarily is made specifically for Commander, because
mm-hmm.
there's other audiences that like legendary creatures. But we think about it, and we think about, right, when we talk about multiplayer play, when how we template things, we very much are much more conscious than we used to be. And R&D has a lot of fans of Commander that themselves play a lot of Commander. I'm not one of those people, but I love the format, I love that it exists, and I love that people like it, and my job is to make sure that we make cards for those players. Like, part of being a good designer is not making cards for what you like about the game, but making cards what everybody likes about the game.
Right.
And that we spend a lot of time and energy figuring out, okay, what do Commander players want? What can we make? Is there a way to take a card and tweak it a little bit so it makes more sense in Commander? We spent a lot of time in the last year or two thinking about red. You know, we've spent a lot of time in the last year or two thinking about red, because red is not naturally really at home in Commander. That,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's a format that has some constraints that kind of play against some of red's inherent strengths. And so we've spent some time going, okay, because my big thing is the color pie is important to me. I don't want to just say, well, it's not supposed to be red, but let's give it a red. I don't want to do that.
Right.
But like Chandra's first ability, what I call impulsive drawing, came about because I had a lot of discussions on my blog about what could red do that felt red. And an idea that I've latched onto is I like the idea that red does things you see other places, but it has immediacy to it.
Yeah.
That red, there's no long game to it, you know. And I like the idea of, okay, you can draw a card if you use it now.
Right.
Like, you
right.
can't, it's not.
That
like,
feels very red.
Right, it feels really red, and it's a way to give red a little bit of that card advantage in a way that, like, that's my big thing. I don't want to undercut weaknesses of colors. I want to find a way to give them strengths that play into what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, red needs a little bit of card advantage, but we don't want to sort of contradict what red is. You know, an impulsive draw was exactly that.
I like that name, Impulsive Drawn. We have noticed that a lot. There's the Outpost Siege, and Shrine of Pyromonster had it, and the, there's like the Abbot
of Carol.
I mean, essentially, it's become a rat. I mean,
and it's great.
I first did it, what's the first genre that did it?
Pyromaster.
Pyromaster,
I convinced them, I made the suggestion, and they're like, well, okay, let's try it. And then it just went over really well, and it's just, I mean, we now, it's an ability Red has that we will use.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. It's good, it's good. As a mono red player myself, I actually played 2 mono red decks last night, and someone else busted that mono red deck, and everyone at the table remarked specifically, I think you'll like this, that mono red decks used to be sort of a laughingstock of Commander until the last couple of years, where they said, now we have all these new tools to play with that really help us close the gap between our decks and other decks that just sort of have natural advantages.
And that's not, I mean, that exists because we've been aware of the format and we are working to try to find those kind of answers. Red's role in the Commander is a perfect example of, we recognize it, we're, you know, we're trying to figure out how to do that. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm whenever we do something and I hear feedback of, oh, this has made this format better, I'm ecstatic, because that is our goal. The hard part is, you know, we have a lot of plates spinning, and so, you know, that's the tricky part is, you know,
that balancing act is,
I want Commander, care about Commander, I want people to, you know, but there's other things, you know.
I believe you had did one of your famous polls on, or tournaments that you do on Twitter.
Head-to-head.
And I do believe Commander was second overall format popularity on that.
On that,
admittedly.
It was the closest ever, though, right?
It lost by like 6 votes or something.
Yeah, it's limited.
Yeah.
I mean, out of thousands of votes, it lost by 6 votes.
By the way, I was very torn, but I went with Commander, but man, I love limited too. So,
you know, if we had told everyone on the podcast to make sure to follow Mark.
Yeah, we would have cheated, you mean? And
cheated? No, come on.
By the way, it's not cheating. If you would like to follow me on Twitter, participate in my head-to-head votes, please. Please,
What's your Twitter, Mark?
That's at Mauro254.
I can't imagine anybody listening is not following you already.
I love your Twitter. There's comics every day. There's polls.
Yeah.
It's like your own news feed of just like...
I put my articles up. I listen to my podcast.
Yeah. Do you have like a person that handles it, or do you do all that yourself?
Oh, a person. I have no person. I'm the person.
That's kind of... It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
It's really impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing that people don't realize. Like, literally, I get up in the morning... And like while I'm showering, I'm like, what's my comic today? I gotta make a comic.
Yeah, you gotta put a lot of...
And then while I'm getting the kids food ready, I'm like, what's my podcast today? I gotta put the podcast. So, like most of my getting ready in the morning is getting my kids ready for school and figuring out what I'm doing that day.
Right.
But I have to do my poll. Okay, I have to lay the poll up, so...
Your kids are like, Dad, you just gave me an egg for breakfast. You need to cook it. You're like, oh, yeah, sorry, I sleep on my podcast.
I do feed my kids, so don't
know. Okay, so we gotta wrap up, but there's one final thing that we have to ask you about. I'm sure all of our listeners are wondering in their head, what are you going to ask about this? So 4 color commanders we know are coming later this year.
I can't say a lot. Here's what I can say. We know players want 4 color commanders. They've been saying it for a long, long time. It's something that keeps coming up. Like I've said, really, if I could go back to original Ravnica and just, you know, make them all legendary, I would have. But
the Nephilims.
The Nephilims.
Yeah,
right.
But we knew it's something we needed to do. The reason it got pushed off, the reason it hasn't been done till now, is it's a tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's the kind of thing where you sit down and go, oh, can we do 4 color? You know, and then you look at the problem and you're like, oh, wow, this is really hard. Here's what I can say about it. So Ethan Fleischer came up with, solved it. We found a way to do it.
He found the magic bullet.
He found the magic bullet, which is such an awesome idea. Like, it is so cool that it's what I call a paperclip moment. Where, like, the first time you ever see a paperclip, you're like, well, how else could you attach papers together? You know, that it's such a beautiful thing that you're like there's no other way to do it than this. But people miss, someone had to make the paperclip, you know. And Ethan had a paperclip moment. Ethan cracked this problem. It is, from a design standpoint, it is such a beautiful solution that I'm excited for people to see it, because it is so elegant. And it's like, people will see it and go, how did no one come up with this before? And so it is really cool. Like we, it's a tough nut to crack. For years and years, like, how are we going to do it? We knew one day we had to do it. We finally cracked the nut. We came up with a really cool, elegant solution that you guys, if you Commander players do not love this, I will be shocked. It is a thing of beauty.
Well, I mean, there's a reason. So Ethan was the lead designer, and he was also the winner of the Great Designer Search in 2010.
Yeah, the second Great Designer Search.
So for good reason.
Yes, Ethan is a great designer, truly, and he did a wonderful job with Commander. And I can't tell you specifics, but I can say that it is something, like, just as a designer, like, wow. Like I remember when I saw it, I literally like, wow. I was like, Ethan, that is amazing.
That's awesome. Well, I feel like we're wrapping up one of the best years in Magic's history for me. Like,
I mean, by the end of this year, I don't know how it can't be. It's been crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I will say this. As someone who's working in 2018 right now.
maybe.
The future's bright.
Yeah.
2017, I'm quite excited for 2017. And 2018 has something that, like, if I can't make you crack a smile... there's good stuff coming. There's
Mark, you always make us crack a smile. So.
All right, Mark. Really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. Again, you can find him on Twitter at
Maro254 or on Tumblr. You can see me at Blogatog is my blog when you come on. Join me on social media. You can vote on if you do talk to Twitter.
We should also say, since clearly you listen to podcasts, you should check out Mark's podcast if you don't already. It's called The Drive to Work.
Drive to Work. It's on iTunes, and I posted through any of my social media on Fridays, and then on the following Monday, it's always in my column online, and it's a half-hour podcast. I literally am driving to work as I record it. People think, like, it's a gimmick. Like, no. I'm actually driving. How do you make that traffic noise?
He has a whole sound design team. Don't listen to him.
Yeah. I mean, we reference your articles all the time when we talk about the color pie and all that. So if you guys really want a great, deeper look into Magic and the history of Magic, Drive to Work's an awesome way to
and my it. Column, Remaking Magic.
Yeah, there you go.
I do not know how you have time to do all this stuff, honestly. All right, thanks again, Mark.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks.
And we should say that Commander 2016, with the four color commanders that Mark was just talking about, releases on November 11th. So not too far off after Call of Duty comes out. This year has been pretty insane for sets.
It's been nuts.
I mean, I'm speechless too.
I came back on Journey into Nyx, and since then, it's been a nonstop roller coaster of sets. Modern Masters 2 was the first big sort of exclusive set that came out after that. And then this year, it's just been EMA, Conspiracy 2. Oh my gosh.
So all the regular sets.
All the regular sets on top of that. Yeah, there's been so much stuff that's happening. My brain is hurting from
it's having
almost to remember
too
all the
much. It's almost too much. And I like that Wizards is pushing the boundary and just trying to see where the sweet spot is. I think the sweet spot is probably one less set at least than it was, or maybe not all in the summer like that. But, you know, I know some people have been critical of them, but how do they know if they don't try it, right? So
yeah, if they see that sales go down slightly because of too many sets, they'll be like, sweet, now we know that we need to do X number of sets, and that Conspiracy 2 did so well that we have to print more and more and more.
That's one of my worries, is that there's not a good spot for Conspiracy, so I don't want it to look like it didn't do well, even though it's just so sandwiched in between so many other things that there might not be... Like, here we are. I've only drafted Conspiracy a couple of times. We're already talking about Kaladesh. We're going to be doing a Kaladesh set review in the next couple of weeks.
We didn't even have time to do a Conspiracy set review.
I know. It's
just coming up
on top of each other. So, yeah, I do think ton of sets. It's good and it's bad. But Commander 2016 is one we're going to make a lot of time for, because four-color commanders is going to be sweet. So, again, November 11th.
Yeah, and it's gotten the same kind of energy and excitement from Glenn that Kaladesh has had for a lot of Wizards employees, which is like, there's something cool and special going on here, so I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully we get a spoiler for one of the actual commanders.
I hope so. Cool. We're always happy to get any preview card. So.
Absolutely.
And now we're going to talk with our good buddy, Gavin Verhey, and he was on the development team for Kaladesh, and was the lead designer for Arch Enemy Nicol Bolas. Now, that's coming out on June 16th of next year, so we're way out ahead of it. But it's fun to hear Gavin tell us what he can about it now.
And it's a multiplayer format, so.
It's totally playable in Commander, so.
Yeah, let's go.
I believe you were actually the first Wizards of the Coast employee that we ever had on our show. Do you remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember it because I had met you guys not that much earlier. I met Jimmy at VidCon, and we started talking and hanging out. Now look at the grandiose adventures you guys get to go on coming to PAX. And I'm glad I'm your first.
It just took 2 short years, and now Josh and I are both at PAX.
Backstage at
WotC
the...
WotC representatives. Yeah, we're in the green room.
Well, Jimmy, you're like the face of the Kaladesh reveal. Actually, you were the face of Eldritch Moon, too. You're the face of everything.
As my friend appropriately called me, he's like, Jimmy, in the 2 years you started playing Magic, you became Mr. Magic. I was like, no, I don't want that name.
Mr. Magic, Jimmy Wong.
You're Mr. Magic in my heart, man.
Oh, sweet. That's good. Excellent. Well, I mean, everyone I meet at Wizards is Mr. and Mrs. Magic to me. So, it's been a great weekend so far. We've talked a lot about Kaladesh with everyone I've seen. All these cards are being previewed left and right. And a lot of our listeners have already sent us individual emails, for one.
Wow.
Someone just said, Rashmi, are you guys excited? And that was like it. Just because there are so many sweet new legendary creatures in the set, the flavor is out of this world.
I think the mechanics, vehicles. So stoked. Gavin, do you want to talk really quick about what your role was on Kaladesh?
Absolutely. So I was on the development team for Kaladesh. So inside R&D, we kind of have more or less two phases. There's actually more than this, but basically a design phase and a development phase. The design phase comes up with the initial ideas, a lot of the initial concepts, initial mechanics, and then the development team tweaks them, refines them, and makes sure that the set is balanced and fun to play and draft constructed and so on. And so I was on the development team for Kaladesh and also on the design team for Aether Revolt. So there was a good 9 month to a year period where I was just submerged completely in Kaladesh.
That's awesome. And this is, I believe this is the first time that we're fully in the two-block structure for Standard as well.
Yeah, because Magic Origins and Dragons of Tarkir will rotate out, and then the format will be Battle for Zendikar block, Shadows Over Innistrad block, and Kaladesh block, and we're in this whole new world.
Did that change any of how you guys approached it design-wise? Did you guys have to have like consider different things into the design process?
The two-block model, while the Kaladesh specifically didn't change anything, our philosophy had to kind of switch gears, because now Standard's going to be a little bit smaller than before, because we're going to rotate out quicker, and making sure that we could balance appropriately to make sure that, okay, we're throwing back to the right mechanics. We want to make sure that stuff in Kaladesh throws back to Battle for Zendikar. And we actually seeded that really early because artifacts and colorless matters work together, right?
Right.
Want to make sure that we're doing the right throw forwards even. We want to make sure that the Standard environment has the right number of strong cards to play with, right? Because if you have a smaller Standard environment, you're going to want to make sure there's maybe even some more slightly higher number of powerful cards to play with because you need more stuff to hit. So that was kind of a general philosophy shift. It wasn't just Kaladesh we were looking at for, but definitely being in the three block a year standard meant that this was, okay, the first time it was going to be tried and true, and we had to make sure that it worked.
Cool. Let's talk about Commander here. And you mentioned Rashmi
earlier,
so I'm going to read Rashmi really quick. There's a new legendary creature, Elf Druid. Costs 2 and Simic, 2 a green and a blue. 4 mana total for a 2/3. Whenever you cast your first spell each turn, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a non-land card with converted mana cost less than that spell's, you may cast it without paying its mana cost. If you don't cast the revealed card, put it into your hand. That sounds a little complicated. You cast a spell, you flip over the top card of your library. If it costs less than the spell you cast it. And if you don't, you draw it.
Yeah, you may cast it. So you can even choose to flip a card and it has a lower CMC and be like, well, it's not appropriate.
It's a board wipe. I don't want to do that.
Or a counterspell or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And you can still draw it into your hand.
So do you remember anything specifically about this card? Because people are going crazy because this card seems insane.
Yeah, I actually have a really good story to tell about Rashmi.
Okay.
Ooh. So this is some insider stuff right here.
Pay attention.
Yeah, I'm going to let it all go.
Hands on exclusive.
Also, Gavin won't be working at Wizards after this next week. And go.
So internally, inside of Wizards of the Coast, we run a rare pull. So with every set, we run one, sometimes even two rare pulls, where we send all the rares and mythics out to everyone in the company who wants them, and they rate all the monsters we love 1 to 10 and leave comments on them. This is really important to us because the ones that do really, really well, we want to keep around and not change much because people obviously like them, and the ones that do really poorly just get kicked out of the set. We have to find new designs for them. The rare pull usually comes before we do hole filling and try and come up with new rares for the set. So we sent out the Kaladesh rare pull, and we all were talking about what we thought was going to win. Was it be a vehicle or an energy card or something? Mm-hmm. And it came back, and Rashmi just crushed it as everyone's favorite card in the rare pull. Wasn't even close. And so that came back, and we're like, wow, people really, really like this card.
Yeah.
And we actually made it better. It was a 5-mana card, and we made it cost 4, so it could come down a little bit earlier and be a little bit stronger.
You pushed it a little earlier.
We pushed it because it'd be really fun if this thing could show up and constructed. We wanted it to be a commander card you could play with, and it's really saucy. Also note that it's each turn, not just on your turn. So if you cast a spell on your turn, and you cast a spell on their turn, you can double trigger it. In commander, there's 5 turns maybe going around. You've got to have enough spells to chain them. Even 1-mana spells will let you draw a card, right?
Because you always draw at the very least, yeah.
So there's some fun stuff to do with this card. I think Prophet of Krufix is gone just in time.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it.
Prophet rotates out, Rashmi is right behind the seals. Not to mention Green Blue is great at flashing stuff in. Alchemist Refuge, I think, is one of the
You can still play Seedborn Muse.
Yeah, that's true.
So
So Rashmi, I'm really excited about it. So I'm actually really interested because a card like this, right, you could take away the name of the card, you could take away the art, and just have the colors and have it do a similar thing because it's based around the color more than, maybe even more than the flavor of the world. Is there any time when you take one of those cards that gets voted out by the company and say, like, you know what, we really like this, we really like what we're doing, but we're going to find a place for it in a future set? Or do you potentially tailor it, being like, oh, because now we're on, you know, this plane, we can make it do this, which maybe may be slightly more interesting.
So the rare pool is really interesting because it gives us data from the whole company about what people think about certain cards. Now, of course, sometimes what everybody thinks without the context of the rest of the set isn't necessarily inclusive of knowing how the set's working, how it's mechanically shaping. Mm-hmm. So because a card is voted low or high, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to get kicked out or go into the set. A common thing Rosewater talks about is really Johnny cards that are like super combo heavy or really weird, will often get voted really, really low because players don't understand how they work, or it's like, why would I ever want to play with this card? Mm-hmm. But we try and preserve some of those in the set so that when they do come out, the player who's a big Johnny, loves that kind of inventingness, will find them and play with them. And especially in Kaladesh, there were a number of cards that weren't voted incredibly high. Not the ones that did horrible, but ones that were kind of middle of the pack, mm-hmm. that we kept around because they would be fun build-arounds. Sometimes we do take cards and put them in future sets, but if a card gets voted something low and you don't have a strong reason for putting it somewhere, it kind of means that, hey, people didn't really like this card in the first place, right? Where if a card gets voted high and has to get kicked out of a set, well, then we definitely want to find a home for it somewhere because players are probably still going to love it in the new environment.
Right. Now, let's talk about vehicles really quickly, because outside of, obviously, I think being an awesome limited, just, I don't know how it's going to work in limited, but I feel like it's going to be really fun and possibly standard. I'm really interested to see what you guys wanted to, like, accomplish with vehicles in the way that, I mean, like, what's sort of like the big picture goals of making vehicles for you guys?
So whenever we introduce a new card type, there's a challenge. Mm-hmm. Because we want it to both be fun to play with and actually show up in people's decks without it being broken and really too powerful.
Right.
And when we introduced equipment or planeswalkers, for example, you can see some of the big stretches we had there. Like equipment in Mirrodin, Locks on a Warhammer was an uncommon. Like, the equipment was super, super strong because R&D at the time didn't appreciate how strong it could be.
Right.
Planeswalkers came out in Lorwyn, and there's this huge power gap. Like, Jace Beleren and Garrick Wildspeaker are both really, really strong, and Liliana Vest and Chandra Nalar only saw a handful of play. So with vehicles, we wanted to try and hit that sweet spot as best as we can. And I think we got there. It took a lot of iterations, as you guys have heard people talk about this weekend. There were a ton of iterations of vehicles over and over and over. And how are they activated? Do they attach to creatures? Do creatures go on them? Mm-hmm. Do the creatures die if the vehicle dies? Can they block? Are they always creatures? All these tiny little knobs to play around with. And we ended up in a space where they're all, like, I think in limited, they're all basically playable at some stage. And then some of them I think will hit in constructed, maybe even older formats too. Commander mm-hmm. is definitely a great place for them. Other challenges to overcome with them included things like, for example, we didn't want them to always be super good at blocking, because one thing that's really easy to do that we found is you can just hold all your creatures up, have a vehicle, and it becomes really hard to attack into because you have to do the math of, okay, they could put these creatures in the vehicle or these creatures in the vehicle, and how's the blocking going to happen? So a lot of them, you'll find, not all of them, but a lot of them are aggressively statted, like the I want to call it the blisteringly fast fire car, but the
Oval Chase Dragster.
The Oval Chase Dragster that we came out with yesterday, the 6-1 Trample Haste, right? That's a great example.
Yeah.
Another thing about vehicles that I really like about how they turned out is there's some mechanics in Magic that are really kinetic. They create a lot of motion and stuff happening. And that's kind of just a fun thing to do. Like with Seaborn Muse, you mentioned earlier, it's awesome just to be like, every turn, bam, untap everything.
Right.
I feel powerful. And with vehicles, there's this great moment of, okay, tap these guys. They get in this. Move this out of like the not a creature zone into the in the creature zone. Attack with it. You do this great little movement. I love the 6-1 for that reason, because it's like, bam, put it out of my hand, tap a creature, put it in, attack you, right? In fact, when I played the 6-1 Trample Haste, I just put it into play, tap and attacking, and then tap my creature. So
that's what it's going to do anyway.
It's already like running as you're like putting it, it's like, it just already goes.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So vehicles had a lot of challenges, but I'm really happy with where we ended up. And I think they're just super fun to play with. Like, you guys will really, really, really enjoy playing with them.
Yeah, and for Commander players, I'm really interested, because crewing, what you guys ended up settling up on was you can tap any number of creatures with a total power X, whatever the number is, to make it into turn the artifact vehicle into a creature. But for me, I'm thinking, oh, this is a great way to tap creatures without having to attack with them.
Yep.
So cards like Gilder Baron, and people have been talking about energy counters as well. So like, that's a perfect synergy right there, where you can find the way to tap this creature without having to send it into battle so that you can use the untap ability. So,
and actually in the set, we built in a few cards that do things when they tap instead of when they attack.
Mm-hmm.
So you can...
So there's synergy for that stuff.
Right, exactly. Smart. You can tap them into your vehicles, and then, you know, their effect still goes off.
There's also, like, the inspired mechanic from, what, Theros
Bond, right?
Yeah, that you want to tap things, but a lot of those creatures, it's set up in such a way, so it's hard to tap them.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. I wanted to talk about D'Pala, the pilot exemplar, which
is... We got there, Josh.
I think we kind of did. You know, this is... You know, Jimmy and I have been talking for a long time that Boros and I don't know if this solves this problem, but it's a good step in that direction, that Boros is really tough in Commander because they don't, those two colors don't do either of the things that all decks need, which are card draw and mana ramp. And Dapala, I'm going to read, is one of red and a white for a 3/3 legendary creature, dwarf pilot, so dwarf. A Boros commander. It says, other dwarves you control get +1/+1, so
it's
dwarf truck. Yep. Each vehicle you control gets +1/+1 as long as it's a creature. And then whenever Dapala becomes tapped, so again, that same synergy,
right.
You may pay X. If you do, reveal the top X cards of your library. Put all dwarf and vehicle cards from among them into your hand, then put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So Dapala is
random
card draw. Oh, sorry, in a random order, yeah. So Dapala is card draw because mm-hmm. you can tap crew a vehicle or attack or whatever gets her tapped, and then you pay some mana and draw some cards, presumably, which I think is really a step in a great direction for Boros. It's always a hard thing. I don't know if you can answer this, Gavin. Is that something that you guys are aware of as an issue that Commander players have, or is that just something that happened? I mean, we're super happy about it because this is the first Boros Commander maybe ever that I personally am like, oh, I could build that deck. Like,
yeah.
That might be exciting.
Well, first of all, I guess you guys should all pick up your Dwarven Recruiters while you still can.
Yes.
Goblin Matron's like, my friends are here.
But, yes. So a few things about Dapala. First of all, we did design it specifically for Commander. We knew that there's a bunch of red dwarves in Magic's history, obviously. Dwarves tend to be a little more white on Kaladesh, but you want to make a commander that would be your dwarf lord in a dwarf commander deck.
Mm-hmm.
And so we built the Pala just for that, red-white commander top-down. And as a result, we wanted to do something that red-white doesn't always get to do, and do something that would encourage you to actually put a bunch of dwarves in your deck, because, historically, a lot of the older dwarves aren't always the most powerful cards in the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted you to both play dwarves, and we knew on this plane that dwarves liked artifacts and vehicles specifically, so we wanted to encourage you to play the vehicles in your deck, so now you actually have the shell of a commander deck you can start building, right? Some of the
right.
old dwarves, some of the newer dwarves, some vehicles, and they're all kind of working together. And even some of the older dwarves might be slightly on the weaker end, they're still good enough because Dapala helps them out.
Right.
And when we were looking at making it, we were looking at cool effects that hit all of these, and yeah, this was something that Red White doesn't get to do a lot, and we thought, well, for Commander, it makes sense. It's a good reason to try something different and get you to do a dwarf-related thing at the same time. With Commander, we're constantly looking for, okay, what is missing, right? You guys, as I'm sure, are very excited about the four-color Commander decks coming out later this year.
Yeah.
And
Don't open that door, my friend.
And that was the discussion of, hey, these are missing. And we've known for a long time they're missing. And it was, when is the right time to do it? Is this the year? Is this the year? And finally, we hit the year, right? And so as we release more and more legendary creatures, some things will obviously overlap. Green's always going to have big legendary creatures, for example, right? But it's also about finding the holes. And what is a new kind of commander deck you could build? What is something that you see and don't just think, oh, I could replace this commander with this commander, but what can I build a whole new deck around?
Mm-hmm.
And Dapala's a great example of that.
Someone mentioned to me yesterday after they saw vehicles, and Gavin, I think you're going to like this particularly. They said, I'm going to finally make a Mad Max deck.
It was Rev, the Rev and Fuego.
Yeah,
he's so excited. And I was like, that is a brilliant idea.
Yeah, Gavin actually cosplayed from Mad Max, and I was like, this is perfect. This is perfect. Dapala is going to be the Mad Max deck.
As a noted fan.
So another really exciting announcement, Gavin, that came out just a couple days ago, I think, is the new Arch Enemy product that's coming out early next year, and you are actually the lead designer on that, is that correct?
Correct. Archenemy Nicol Bolas.
Ooh.
So sweet. And
people
we
love Nicol Bolas, by the
way. Well, and we also know Nicol Bolas is coming back also.
Yeah,
and Amonkhet, which I assume you cannot talk about yet. So we'll just concentrate on Archenemy. Can you tell us a little bit? Well, first of all, do you want to explain what Archenemy is to our viewers that don't know?
Absolutely. So Archenemy originally came out, I think it was 8 years ago or
mm-hmm.
so, and it was a really unique play format in that you played three players against one player. How do you even that out? Well, the one player has this deck of 20 schemes that are really, really powerful. They'll do things like destroy the board or gain control of other people's cards or destroy their lands, any number of horrible effects that could befall
mm-hmm.
the other team. And so there's this pretty fun little mini game of, okay, can the three players overcome this one massively powerful player? Plus, the schemes all have totally sweet name like Dance My Puppets and things like that. So you get to have some fun with that.
Yeah, you kind of play the villain in like a Marvel movie or something,
right, right.
Where it's like you against all the Avengers. So then what was the reasoning behind revisiting Arch Enemy, and what were the challenges that you like walked into that project with?
So the first Arch Enemy product was actually pretty popular among people who played it, but the problem was it was a little difficult to get into because it was released as a bunch of different separate decks you had to buy instead of one box you could play with.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to go out, buy all the decks to get all the schemes you wanted to play with, and then it was a hassle. It was
You had to assemble it, right?
You had to kind of assemble it, right? And it's a lot easier to do what we're doing this time around, which is you buy one box. It has everything you need to play, a deck for everybody. It has all the schemes you need to play. And you can kind of just put it on your shelf, too, and be like, oh, I have a bunch of friends over. Let's play this, right? I don't have to construct any decks. You don't have to bring anything of your own. Mm-hmm. This is all here and self-contained, ready to play. Now, we did, of course, factor in people will play their own decks. We could play Commander or whatever you guys want to do. It could be really, really fun. But all the decks are balanced against each other, and there's a deck, actually, for each kind of player type. So there's one deck, for example, that is geared more toward a newer player. So if I want to sit down with a friend who doesn't play as much Magic, it's not like it's not fun to play if you're experienced, but there's one deck that's like, okay, I get it. This is a very straightforward deck, mm-hmm. and I can help you through this. I can teach you how to play or bring you into this if you know less. Mm-hmm. One of the decks tends to be on a little more complicated end, so if you're really experienced and want to do some crazy stuff, you can sit down and do this. So no matter whether you're a bunch of newer players or a bunch of more experienced players, there's something there for you. And the Arch Enemy deck, of course, is just crazy, right? There's some pretty nutty stuff in there.
Right.
Can't talk about what quite yet, but there's some really, really fun stuff. And we got to the point where people were wanting to get into playtests because they wanted to try this thing out, right? It's just so much fun to play and be the archenemy and announce those card crazy scheme names. It's got 20 all-new schemes, so archenemy lovers can come in and get some new stuff to add into your archenemy deck. And, of course, they're fully compatible with all the old schemes. If you want to build it out and do something crazy with all the old ones, go nuts.
Well, that's really exciting because this is now, I feel like it's another great multiplayer format that Wizards is being like, hey, guys, get friends together and play this together. And I felt that way about sort of the dual deck anthologies, but it was multiplayer. But it's like, hey, cool, you could just randomly pair these up against each other, bring them on the trip. They're pre-built. They're ready to go. And there is something really, really awesome and convenient about that. And, like, it just reminds me of Conspiracy 2, which I've been drafting a bunch of recently. And I also have you to thank for a lot of that as well. So.
And, of course, Plane Chase Anthology is coming out this year, too, which
you can
do multiplayer, and is very, very fun.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the anthologies, especially as a player that came back to the game around Journey into Nyx. I missed a lot of those sets, so it's nice to be able to, you know, with the Commander Anthologies coming out as well. So.
Yeah, the Archenemy with Commander decks is actually really fun. I've done it a few times, and we've talked about Secret Partners and a few other different ways to sort of spice up your Commander. Mm-hmm. Play, you know, your play group, if you just play, like, the same four people just playing free-for-all every night, you know, it can get stale. So it's nice to plane chase. It's nice to have archenemy. It's nice to spice it up in that way. And I will say also that when you hang around Wizards people enough, you can get this feel for, like, what they're buzzing about. And this is one of those products that internally, and they should know, they're buzzing out about a little bit, which, I mean, that bodes well.
Yeah, this is also a thing where we haven't really done this in a long time, right? This is the first archenemy release in 8 years or whatever. So if it's really successful, we could definitely do more in the future. And we're kind of putting it out there as a fun experience. And if it does really well, then this could mean big things for archenemy in the future. Also, it's really cool to have a box on your shelf that you can just bring out and play with anybody, right? Like, Magic is a great game. We all love Magic. Mm-hmm. But sometimes if you have a friend who hasn't played in a while or something, they just don't have an up-to-date deck, they don't know the set for drafting, it's really cool to just pull this out and be like, hey, you need to bring nothing. Let's just sit down on Saturday night and play some archenemy against each other
right.
and have a blast.
Do you think it's a good way to teach someone with a straightforward deck that is sort of not just fairly new, but really new to the game?
I think you could, right? Because you're playing as a team, three mm-hmm. players on a team, and so you can help guide them through it. You'd probably want to just teach them some of the basics ahead of time, right? So you're not necessarily slowing everything down. But, you know, once they know the basics of maybe attacking, how mana works, casting spells, then you can be like, oh, see, you should do this here and kind of explain the rationale behind it and learn as you go, which is a really great experience.
Yeah, that's actually a great way to play because it's tough. I was just teaching a friend the other day and we were using the dual decks and I was like, all right, just creatures and lands. But it's really hard to coach someone through when the other person's sitting across the table because then it just becomes a very much like, all right, you're just dashing around sort of telling each person what to do. So mm-hmm. I love the teamwork aspect of that.
And at pre-releases, I see Two-Headed Giant often used that way, right? And that's another great tool of, oh, I can play this with my friend and, mm-hmm. and help them out. And in Archenemy, it's great, just casually, you know, you play it at the kitchen table with your friends and really guide them through what's happening. And also argue a lot, which is fun. I guess one other thing I'll say on that is we definitely built the decks to work together. So it's really, really fun as the three players playing against the archenemy to do things to help each other out.
They learn that, like, oh, my card will synergize with your card, not just my own deck. That's
right.
Pretty cool.
There's some learning there that happens as you play more times.
Oh, it's like be your own gatewatch, kind of.
Be your own gatewatch. He just wrote your copy line for the marketing for it. Yeah, it's okay. I'll send it
Story
to you.
Story team's like, but they're not the gatewatch. We
it
should reference
no,
them.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's like, let's not.
All right, Gavin, really appreciate you coming on and taking some time with us. Really excited for the new products and everything Wizards got in store. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And well, before we leave, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at Gavin Verhey, first name, last name on Twitter, as well as on Tumblr, gavinverhey.tumblr.com. My name is pretty unique, so there's I got all those domains.
Ingenious. Awesome. All right. Thanks so much, Gavin.
All right.
Always good talking with Gavin.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Good guy.
Great guy. Yeah. One of my favorites. And he comes down to LA constantly, too.
He really does.
He did let me know on the side that, because after we played so much of Conspiracy, he was like picking our brains as to what we liked and what we didn't like. And he said, it's like, we may have used some of your ideas, in quotes, heavy quotations, to help influence the set design.
Wow. So, wow.
Josh, you were a playtester on R&D, essentially.
I basically was in R&D. I like it. Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Time for To the Listeners. We want to know what you think of Padim. Are there any cool combos that you see or usages? You know, it seems like a pretty straightforward card. But, you know, there's always stuff I'm always surprised. People will tweet about some card I've never heard of, or they'll come up with two cards that come together. So is there anything with Padim that you see that I'm not seeing right now? Because right now it just looks kind of like, it looks good, but it doesn't look very breakable.
I want to see a deck that's just called the Impress Me deck, and it has to do with every card that wants you to have the highest CMC of stuff.
It's just five-color Impress Me.
Yeah, five-color Impress Me.
I like that.
Yeah, and you can't play it unless Padim's on the battlefield. You're stuck to the flavor. Just to let you guys know, we are, again, sponsored by the wonderful Card Kingdom. Make sure you guys go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone if you want to support the show. Using that link basically just shows them, hey, this person came here using this link. They bought these cards. This is what they liked. And cool, like, we know that X number of people this month came from the Command Zone, and this number came on Tuesday because that's when their episode releases. So we got to see that, wow, this is a great, you know, working partnership we have with them, and it helps us out, helps them out. Altogether, it's a nice synergistic relationship.
And you still get all the Kaladesh cards that you want. Works for everybody.
Yep. And if you guys don't know, it's Card Kingdom. They'll get you your order incredibly quickly. Customer service through the roof. One of our listeners tweeted us a picture. They asked for a Black Lotus to be included with their order, and they sent them a token, and someone drew all over the token to make it look like a Black Lotus.
Yeah, that was Jake Travers.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Waffle Cone, Power 9.
So we'll show that in the video. So make sure you guys check that out if you're watching the video version of this.
All right, time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I've got something cool.
Yeah?
It's Iceland.
Ooh.
So we went on that long trip, three different countries, London and Copenhagen are not countries. The UK, Denmark, and Iceland. Iceland, far and away my favorite. Wow. I very much enjoyed London and Copenhagen, but Iceland is otherworldly in its beauty. I think I might have to go back there at least three more times in my lifetime. That's how much I liked it.
Whoa. Well, it was your girlfriend's second time there, right?
Yeah. But we did the southern part of the island. There's also a northern part. And then we did it in the summer. So I'm also going to need to do it in the early winter to see when it's all frosted over with snow. You can't go. Oh, cool. You don't really want to go in the middle of winter because they do that thing where they have 24 hours of darkness or whatever.
Ooh, yeah.
But you do get to see a lot of northern lights during that time. Anyway, that's how beautiful it is. Also, my drone video, I lugged my drone around through London where I wasn't allowed to fly it, through Copenhagen and Denmark where I'm not allowed to fly it, all the way just to get it to Iceland where I was allowed to fly it. And the drone footage is unbelievable. It's the best thing I've ever shot. You have to watch it. Like, it'll blow your mind. It's crazy. Like,
where can we find it?
The link will be in the show notes, or possibly it'll be annotated in the video, maybe. I don't know how to do that stuff. Jimmy will have to do that if that happens. But
I can do that.
The drone video, we'll have Terry put up a little clip right here. And there's beauty in the world. It's crazy. Like, I'm watching the stuff I shot, and I'm just, like, still, like, gaga over it. Like,
yeah, well, you get to see it from a completely different angle. Because you just standing there is one thing, but seeing the drone far and away and above the land where
you can get, like, right over the waterfalls. You can get, like, onto the glaciers. You can get behind, over the mountains, like... That's sick. Pretty insane. It's a place where we had a five-hour drive from the airport to, like I said, doing the southern part of the island, and we were driving from the far west side to the far east side to the biggest city on the east side, which is like 3,000 people. It's teeny, but Iceland's not very populated. And it's a five-hour drive. It took us 11 hours because I was just stopping the car constantly because I was like, hold on, I got to pull over and take a picture of that. Yeah. I got to fly my drone right there. Like, we couldn't make it more than 10 minutes without stopping, so it just took forever. That's the kind of place that it is. So put Iceland on your bucket list if it's not there already.
It's on there now. Can't wait. Someday I'll go. Who knows when.
So. Segway man is failing me here. I was like, my brain's like, how does that lead to Masters of Modern Podcast? It doesn't.
It just did.
Our sister podcast at the MMcast on Twitter. Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman talk about modern and all things competitive magic. They just had their 100th live stream episode. Congratulations,
congrats,
gentlemen.
Guys, you did
congratulations.
It. That's awesome.
They counted down the top 100 cards in modern.
Whoa.
How long at the time of this recording, they haven't actually done it yet. It'll be on Saturday and this is Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time you're listening to it, they will have already done it. I want a prediction, Jimmy, on how long you think start to finish it takes that stream to count down 100 cards.
It takes us an hour to count down 10 on this show sometimes.
But we have 10 each. They have 100 so total. 20.
I would say I'm going to give them 4 hours, 4-hour podcast to count it all down. And at number one, Jace the Mind Sculptor.
That's the number one most powerful card in modern. Or number one. Sorry, I don't know if it's most powerful. It's just top 100 cards in modern. But well, it can include cards that were previously banned.
I mean, for a specific reason. I think it's that or like Stoneforge Mystic.
Do you think they'll do a card that's currently banned?
A good point. Maybe it's Lightning Bolt.
It might be Lightning Bolt.
I'm a big fan of Lightning Bolt, obviously.
I bet it's Lightning Bolt because it's sort
or
of
path.
It's format defining. I think Lightning Bolt more so because you can take that into account, whereas mm-hmm. Path is like, well, if they have Path.
Right.
Unless you're just going to play all Hexproof creatures. But Modern does make it so that creatures with 3 toughness or less are way less likely to be played than, you know, depending on the cast cost. Anyway, I don't know a lot about Modern, but Alex and Ben do.
And our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. Make sure you guys check out the video versions of these podcasts where you can see Josh's drone footage. You can see stuff from the vlog as well. The entire vlog is on our YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. So you guys make sure you check that out. And big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who makes the living card animations that play at the beginning of our episodes with that awesome, awesome intro. You can find him at LivingCardsMTG on Twitter.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Hold on. Hold on. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
I had to hold that up for like a long time.
They go like this. Peace out. Snip, 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 snip. Rocks. There you go. Rock, beat, scissors.